Midwestern enthusiasts of snakes and lizards and all things herpetological will converge in Madison this weekend for the Midwest Herp Symposium. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, November 6th. We will talk with one of the symposium's organizers about the joys of keeping reptiles and amphibians. And we will talk about how we can look for them out in the wild, and we will welcome any questions you might have about reptiles and or amphibians. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we will meet some herps in the studio this morning, and we will post some photos on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well, so check that out. Our guest is Ryan McVeigh, president of the Madison Area Herpetological Society. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for coming back, and thank you for bringing in some of your friends. We will talk about them in just a moment, but tell us about this symposium first. This is a big deal. The whole Midwest Herp Symposium is here in Madison.
Yep, so this is the 30th year of the Midwest Herpetological Symposium, and it travels to different herpetological societies throughout the Midwest that host it, and this year the Madison Area Herpetological Society got the opportunity to host it, so that's been an amazing opportunity, and it's basically an event open to the public and anybody that likes reptiles or amphibians to come in and hear from some of the top speakers that from around the country on everything from some different captive care of animals to how to educate the public properly to help get people to share their joy of animals, and then on top of that, things like talking about snake fungal disease and wild populations and other things dealing with natural animal or animals in their habitat.
And I'm looking forward to learning more, even though this is a return visit from you. We've talked in the past about the stereotypes of reptiles and amphibians. A lot of people think they're scaly or slimy or something. And then we also talked about how to find them in the Wisconsin wild, and that was a lot of fun. What exactly, though, are herps? What animal groups do they include?
So herpetology is the studies of reptiles and amphibians, and reptiles and amphibians is broken down into a bunch of groups. So for amphibians, you have frogs, toads, salamanders, newts, and Sicilians. And reptiles, you have lizards, snakes, turtles, tortoises, tuatara.
What is that?
A tuatara. So a tuatara is a really, really cool reptile that the last living relative it had in its order was a dinosaur.
Oh.
So they're very rare, and they're from New Zealand, and it's just a really, really cool animal to learn about.
So remind us, what personally got you so interested in reptiles and amphibians?
I have always remembered having an interest. Even when my oldest memory was when I was four, we had a family get together out at a park, and there was a pond nearby, and all the toads were morphing into little toadlets, all the tadpoles. And I spent the entire day running around with Dixie cups, filling them with little baby toadlets, and then dumping them around myself and playing with them. And I can't remember ever a time not loving reptiles and amphibians.
Very neat. And how many reptiles and amphibians do you have hanging around the house with you?
It varies. Probably around 100 or so, or 100 to 200. It depends. And it sounds like a lot, but at the same time, sometimes that'll be 10 little frogs in a tank. But yeah, me and my wife and my entire family are very, very interested in a lot of these animals and breeding them and working to conserve them in captivity.
Wonderful. So you did bring in some of your, now are these your personal pets?
Three of these are, and then one of them actually is going to be at the Herp Symposium as part of a silent auction type thing.
Oh, well, who's going to get auctioned off?
The bull rat snake.
Oh, okay, so tell us about this is a hybrid.
Yeah, so this came from the Wildlife Discovery Center in Lake Forest, Illinois. Their curator, Rob Carmichael, is going to be one of our speakers, and they have a display with some native species, and they had a bull snake and a rat snake, and they ended up breeding and creating hybrids, which is extremely unusual, so he donated a couple of them to the auction and just to see, it gives our people an opportunity to own a really unique animal that's not really available anywhere else.
So let me ask a few questions here. This is a small, and people, this we have a picture of the bull snake rat snake hybrid on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's a he or she?
This one's a he.
He is a little guy, but when I heard bull snake, isn't the bull snake like the most gigantic snake you can find in Wisconsin?
Bull snakes can reach up to 6 feet, and black rat snakes usually can reach up to about 5 feet. And it sounds really big, but they're only about as big around as a golf ball. So while they're still 6 feet, you can hold them in your hands pretty easily. So this is a little baby, but it's probably going to get 5.5-6 feet.
And now, why would you want to have a snake that gets to be about 6 feet?
Again, it sounds really big, but they're a really thin snake, so they're actually not as big as they sound. But it's another unique animal, and it just kind of depends on which species you enjoy. And a lot of people really connect with reptiles. I think it's kind of like fish tanks. When you watch a fish tank, there's a fluid motion, and it's kind of relaxing. And I find that a lot of people find that same feeling with reptiles. You're holding a snake. It's a really fluid motion as you're holding it and as it's moving around, and it's kind of calming.
It is. It actually is. I was a little bit nervous that this particular snake was going to, scoot out of my hands. I didn't want it to fall down and hurt itself somehow. But I'm not afraid of snakes. A lot of people are, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I run into a lot of people that are afraid of snakes, and especially with the Herp Society and going out and doing public outreach and education. And I'd say 99% of the time, it's just misinformation or lack of knowledge. It's hard to get over a fear of something we don't know anything about. And if the more you educate people, most of the time they come around and start to appreciate them. They may not jump into loving them and hugging them right away, but I can get a lot of people that at least will appreciate them. But there is always the one person who was deathly afraid and almost crying seeing one, and then after a few hours of talking to them, had a big snake around their neck and was taking pictures and sending them to their family. And
now, does this particular snake have a name? A pet name?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. Just picked it up yesterday.
Oh, so okay.
It'll kind of be up to whoever ends up with it.
Bull rat or rat bull or no.
Yeah, it they're referred to as bull rats, but it's a, like I said, it's a black rat snake bull snake hybrid.
So what if I was the one who had the winning bid on the bull rat snake, what kind of care would it need? What would I be doing to take care of it?
The nice thing about this species is it's native to Wisconsin. The two species that hybridized to make it are both native to Wisconsin. So it doesn't take anything really extreme to take care of them. You just need a simple tank set up with some substrate and some places for it to hide, and a little bit of heat, like a heat pad underneath it and a light. The nice thing about reptiles is they're extremely low maintenance, especially snakes. You're looking at an animal that eats once a week and goes to the bathroom once a week. And you can't really
it only goes to the bathroom once a week?
That's it. So you can't really get more low maintenance than that.
And did it go to the bathroom already this week?
As far as I know, it probably did.
And what is it eating?
It's eating fuzzy mice, so small mice, but it eats frozen mice. So you buy packages of frozen mice, and you can thaw one out at a time, and then they'll eat that dead frozen rodent.
And that one mouse will be it for
That's it for a week.
For a week, wow.
Yep.
Well, that's very... Now, let me ask you, Ryan, I guess I'm thinking about the stories we hear about not so much the native snakes getting away, but like a big boa constrictor getting away from somebody or somebody, I don't know, even maybe purposely letting it out. I mean, that's not good, is it?
No, mm-hmm. And we've dealt with cases like that with the Herp Society, and a lot of times there's very few times that actually it does happen. I'm not going to say it doesn't, but it's a lot less than people think, especially with things like Craigslist and things like that. These animals do have a monetary value, just like a lot of times any other pets do. So it's sort of a last resort for some people, and a lot of times we'll get calls for the Herp Society of people trying to, I can't take care of my animal anymore, and the number of responsible people that try and find it a home compared to the irresponsible people that would do something like that is a million to one.
Well, it's a very, very pretty snake, too. What's really pretty, and we only have a couple of minutes before news break, and then we'll talk more, but this lizard you brought in is very... tell us about this lizard.
So that is a juvenile blue-tailed monitor from Indonesia. It's a they're a really beautiful little lizard that has, it's a jet black with a lot of yellow spots on it, and its tail turns aqua teal blue.
It's a very long tail, too.
Yes.
And what does it use that tail for?
So they use their tail for balance, for defense. They'll use it to whip a predator to try and keep them away, and then also for swimming. Yes, and as they grow, it's a very strong, meaty tail. So if they decide to whip you, it's painful.
Is that why you didn't tell me I should pick this one up?
No, I did not. He's a little bit more, as a baby, he's a little bit more jumpy and squirrely, and he has very, very sharp claws. So I wouldn't have you handle him just because he'd scratch up pretty good and probably try and get away.
And he might, never mind, we'll talk about that after we check news. From NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, we are talking about reptiles and amphibians and more with Ryan McVeigh, president of the Madison Area Herpetological Society. He is one of the organizers of the Midwest Herp Symposium, which is starts today and runs through Sunday at the Monona Terrace in Madison. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking all things herpetological this hour with Ryan McVeigh, who is president of the Madison Area Herpetological Society. He's one of the organizers of the Midwest Herp Symposium, which starts today and runs through Sunday in Madison. For registration information, you can visit madisonherps.org, but I'm not sure, Ryan, if you can still register to be a part of the symposium.
You can. Unfortunately, the dinners, I had to have a final count in earlier this week, so that's no longer an option, but the symposium is definitely still an option. So people can still head on there, and on the left side of the Facebook page is a Midwest Herp Symposium sign up.
And we are talking all things herps and welcoming any questions you might have or any stories you might have. Are you a fan of amphibians and reptiles? Do you keep any as pets? Do you like to look for them out in the woods? Do you need any help identifying or have any questions about caring for? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we met our lizard and we met our snake. You also brought in itty-bitty turtles. Who are these guys?
These guys are little hatchling Reeves turtles, and they're native to Asia. And these guys just kind of came in recently from a breeder, so they will end up getting set up in their enclosure when I get home today.
Very cute and a very pretty it looks like, is it a toad or a frog?
It's a toad. So these are this is a Vietnamese yellow spotted climbing toad, and it's one of the only toad species that has tree frog toe pads. They're really, really beautiful blue color for the females, and the males are usually like a brown or a brick red. And they have really long fingers, and they spend most of their time up in trees, and they're an arboreal toad.
And this toad is one of your pets?
Yep, this actually is an animal that is staying at my house currently. It eventually will be going to work with me.
What do you mean? You're going to use it as a mascot or something?
No. So I work for Zillow Reptile Products, and we have a really unique lab where we keep a lot of animals and just kind of test out different lighting and things on them. And we got a huge different variety of different types of animals so that we can kind of work on making the husbandry practices and the stuff available for husbandry better for keeping these animals in captivity.
Well, they really are very, very pretty. And we did post another more photos, including our tree toad. Is that what it is? A tree toad?
Vietnamese yellow spotted climbing toad.
And that's on Facebook, the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and it's on Twitter as well. We have full lines, so let's start taking some calls, people with questions or thoughts. Casey in Whitewater. Hi, Casey.
Hi. I was just wondering, what are some of the endangered species that we'll find in the Midwest, along with invasive species, and how are both of those being dealt with?
Excellent question, Casey.
So, and there's a fair amount of endangered species. For example, in Wisconsin, we have both rattlesnake species, the timber and the massasauga, are endangered. Bull snakes are endangered. there's ornate box turtles, and there's a lot of other animals that are threatened or of special concern. There's programs through the DNR and some of the universities to try and work on conserving habitat and just getting awareness out there of what these animals are and that they are endangered, and if you see one, to make sure to avoid harming it or anything. And then invasives, there's the nice thing about especially the upper Midwest, is most of the species, reptile and amphibian-wise, that come in for the pet trade or anything like that, they have a difficult time becoming invasive because they come from really tropical environments, where if they're below 55 degrees to 50 degrees for one night, they develop respiratory problems and they pass away from it. And there's not many places in the Midwest where it's not 55 degrees at some point during the year, especially for an extended period of time. So like in Wisconsin, we get a nice hard freeze, and any possible exotic reptiles or amphibians that are loose end up freezing and dying.
Oh, that's that's sad. Well, what about the natives, though? I'm thinking about this week has been very mild and warm, but it's going to get really, really cold.
Yeah, so exotic species live in areas where it's warm year-round, so they haven't evolved and adapted to understand how to hibernate, their bodies don't produce the glycol they need in order to be able to hibernate. So the species that are in Wisconsin and are in the areas that freeze burrow underground into large dens, and they instinctually know when winter's coming and when it's time to hibernate. But those other species don't.
And do some of them, I'm thinking, stay under a frozen lake and just hang out in the water even?
Yep, a lot of frogs and turtles do that.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting that they can survive that way. Let's go to Jim in River Falls. Hello, Jim.
Hi, a good topic. I'm a veterinarian. Do zoo and wildlife work, and I just wanted to do a public service announcement that they can be great pets. Something to be aware of, though, is that with herps, that they normally carry salmonella as part of their normal gastrointestinal flora. So you have to be aware of that. When you handle them, you want to wash your hands before you eat. You don't want them crawling around in food areas, kitchens, on your table, because those bacteria can be picked up off surfaces as well, and people can become sick with them. So that's something to be aware of.
Yeah, also, hold on, Jim. I know you have another point, but I see that Ryan would like to respond to that, and maybe we can have a little conversation about that.
Yeah, no, so reptiles definitely do carry salmonella as part of their digestive tract. And a big part of, like you said, being safe is just washing your hands, and that really comes with any animal, petting dogs, cats, anything. You really should wash your hands afterwards. And the cases of salmonella with reptiles compared to salmonella with just eating your daily food is almost insignificant, but it is something to be aware of. Obviously, don't handle them and then eat food without washing your hands, but it's something to be aware of, but it's a very, as long as you're aware of it, it's usually a very low kind of concern.
I remember stories back, and boy, I don't even know if they sell them at the stores anymore. Maybe they do, but little baby, those little turtles, that there was a concern that was especially dangerous for a child to have.
Yep, and that came about because of the husbandry of turtles. So the thing with reptiles and amphibians, too, is they live in an environment that you're in control of. It's not like a dog or a cat that's going to let you know, hey, I have to go to the bathroom, I need to go outside, and you let them outside to go to the bathroom, and
they don't use kitty litter boxes,
yeah.
Too, yeah.
So that poop is outside of your house. With a reptile or amphibian, they go to the bathroom in their enclosure, and the cleanliness of their enclosure is completely up to the person that owns the animal. And if they're not constantly keeping up on keeping it clean, eventually, unfortunately, that animal's basically walking through its own poop. And that's where a lot of that salmonella stuff comes from, is if you're not constantly taking care of that animal's environment. And turtles are notorious for that, because if they live in water, they live in stagnant water, and they eat in it, and there's extra food that goes bad in there, and they go to the bathroom in it, and they're eventually, if you're not cleaning it, they're swimming around in a toilet. And that breeds bacteria, especially things like salmonella that are in their digestive tract, and but it builds up quicker in an environment like that. So a lot of that potential harm for salmonella infection is also directly related to how well you care for that animal and keep it clean.
I noticed you did bring some antibacterial stuff, and yep. And I did, after handling, I used that. Was that for my benefit, or was that so I don't spread stuff among the reptiles?
It's kind of both. Yeah. It's just a precaution because like we said, mm-hmm. they do have salmonella in their digestive tract, and like this little toad went to the bathroom in his container. So just for a safety thing, I always use hand sanitizer. When we do shows, we've got bottles of it everywhere, yeah. just as a precaution.
And Jim, did you want to follow up on that, or do you have any anything else?
Well, I can follow up on that too. So, yeah, there were federal regulations put in place so that pet shops can't sell turtles. I think it's below 4 inches with shell size because of the salmonella issues that were happening when all those small turtles were being sold back in the 70s and 80s or whatever. Yeah. So that's why you're not seeing them at pet stores anymore. But some of it's common sense, and as he said, with all animals, it's good to wash hands before eating after working with them. I guess the other thing I wanted to bring up is that it's, you know, like other pets, you should have a veterinarian that's familiar with those species when you have pet reptiles, because they do get sick themselves. And when a lot of different animals are commingled, they can spread diseases too. And there's certain species that are more susceptible to certain parasites and things like that than others. So, it's not really a good idea to mix these animals together oftentimes because they can spread diseases amongst themselves. And like I said, it's good to have a veterinarian that's familiar with the species you have.
Mm-hmm. Ryan?
Yeah, so no, that's a really good point. A lot of times you really need a veterinarian that understands reptiles and amphibians. I've come across people who've had issues and gone to their local dog and cat vet and didn't get really good advice. Fortunately enough, in the Madison area, we've got some vets at the UW that are great with reptiles and amphibians, and Dr. Michael Weninger at Spartan Animal Hospital in McFarland is a very good reptile vet. He personally takes care of all my animals. Yeah, it's definitely something to know when you're getting into it, that if it does get sick, where are you going to take it? And to be aware that they do get sick, so there are possible vet bills that you have to deal with, and just being aware of that as it could potentially come up.
Yeah. I suppose there's a different lifespan for all the different animals, but for example, if I have a bull rat snake, how long would that live?
So bull snakes and rat snakes are part of a group of snakes called colubrids. So that's your garter snake, king snakes, milk snakes. Usually those live between 15 and 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so most reptiles live 10 to 15 years or more at the minimum. So it's good to know when you get them to research that animal and understand how long you're going to have it. A good example is these cute little baby turtles could live to be 45 years old.
That's amazing. The turtle or the tortoise does live a long time.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jim. If you have a question about reptiles, amphibians, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you have some favorite reptiles or amphibians? Tiffany on Facebook writes, I love axolotls. What are those?
So an axolotl is a really, really cool little amphibian. It's basically the larval stage of a salamander, but they live in that stage in water their entire life. They never morph out into a salamander unless they're forced to.
And someone loves that.
Yeah, they're really cute. You can get them in different... There's albino ones. So you have like a little white salamander with big fluffy pink gills. And they're just... They're pretty goofy looking, but they're in a really cute way. There's a lot of little cute cartoons of them and stuff.
And Tiffany then says, I am wondering, is it normal for them to fight when they are approaching puberty? I have one male
who has lost an arm due to fighting.
Yeah, it's never good to keep axolotls together at all. As juveniles, as if you keep a bunch of babies that have just hatched out, they'll actually eat each other until there's only a few left. And amphibians are kind of commonly known for if it moves, it's food, and they just stuff it in their mouth, even if it's their brother or sister, they don't really care. So the biggest ones get bigger faster, and then they eat all their siblings. Well, the cool thing about axolotls is they can actually lose a limb and regenerate it.
Oh my gosh, I'm still getting over the eating your brothers and sisters. What is the difference between an amphibian and a reptile?
So amphibians have smooth skin, and then reptiles' bodies are covered in scales, but they're both cold-blooded animals.
Oh, all right. Interesting. You know, and I think I told you just before we started that I saw a Facebook video just... It was just late last night. It was some sort of lizard, and I believe it was called a monitor. And it was eating a spider off the wall. and the post was something about, hey, if you don't like spiders, you might like to have a monitor because that will, you know, it'll eat the spiders from your house. So I don't know if I'll get one just for that reason. It's kind of funny. I'm not a big spider fan, but I'm not afraid of the lizards or the snakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would definitely be a very expensive diet to feed a tarantula.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Let's go to Chris in Eau Claire next. Hello, Chris.
Hi. I have a quick question. I have two leopard geckos, and you guys were talking about cleaning the reptiles' enclosures. And I clean it pretty frequently, but I'm wondering, I usually just rinse it out with water because I don't want to spray Windex in there or something, but I'm wondering if there's something I should be using to clean it out with.
Yeah, definitely. So definitely don't use Windex, but when... I'd say with every 3 months or so, with regular spot cleaning during the week, every 3 months you should definitely break down the whole tank and scrub everything up. I like to use dish soap, just dish soap to scrub everything. It's generally pretty antibacterial, but then I'll also rinse it in a 10% bleach solution. And that generally takes care of all the bacteria. And then same thing, rinsing out the entire tank and the screen and giving a good cleaning.
Okay, and then, you know, the substrate on the floor, we just have it's not sand or anything, it's like a little fake green carpet thing. I should probably soak that in the bleach solution too then?
If you're using the carpets, they make a really good substrate because they're not ingestible.
Right.
But they do need to be cleaned a lot more frequently because every time you go to the bathroom, even if you're cleaning up that little poop, there's a lot of liquids that have actually soaked down into that carpet that have a higher bacteria. So you're going to want to take that out probably every other week and wash it. And usually it's good to have two or three of them and rotate them.
I rinse it out about every week. So, but I should probably be doing something with the bleach solution then every couple weeks.
Yeah, that's actually, you generally throw those even through the wash machine.
Oh, okay.
All right, Chris, so tell me why you like keeping a gecko.
Well, I like keeping the leopard geckos because my son liked keeping the leopard geckos, and now he's in Germany on an exchange program for his senior year of high school.
Oh, you're taking care of your son, but that's wonderful. So he loves the geckos.
Cute.
Yeah,
they're just cute. They have permanent smiles. So
very nice. So mom's taking care of her son's geckos. That's cute. Let's see. I think we have time before news for Vivian in Green Bay. Hi, Vivian.
Hi. Questions regarding wild snakes, and I have some property that in the North Woods. And over the years, I've had the hognose snake, pine snake, and, of course, a lot of garter snakes, grass snakes running around. But I haven't seen a hognose, and they used to leave a skin shed, so I was aware they were there. I'm wondering if we need to do anything to help out our native snakes in the wild.
That's a good question. So if you have a lot of land, the best thing you can do is just to preserve that habitat the way it is. There's not a lot that you can really do to keep them there. If they want to move, there's things that they'll sense, like differences in temperatures and in the ground and in the barometric pressures and changes and things like climate change and things like that causes is going to cause them to move over time. But there's not a whole lot you can do other than just keeping that habitat clean and keeping it nice.
Is there a reason, and we only have 30 seconds, are hog-nosed snakes declining in numbers as far as you know?
Not that I'm aware of, but they are a snake that is a little bit more rare and elusive, and they don't like to spend a lot of time out, so...
We'll talk more about snakes and lizards and all things herpetological after we return from the news. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a story you'd like to share. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about reptiles and amphibians this hour with Ryan McVeigh, president of the Madison Area Herpetological Society. He is one of the organizers of the Midwest Herp Symposium, which runs today through Sunday at the Monona Terrace in Madison. He is here talking with us about caring for reptiles and amphibians as pets, helping us identify what these animals look like out in the wild, answering your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And, Ryan, I wanted to ask you about this legislation that the Wisconsin legislature has been discussing, tightening Wisconsin laws about owning exotic species, special attention to dangerous creatures like lions, based on, in part, the infamous Milwaukee lion sightings. How would this affect herp enthusiasts?
So one of the things on the ban lists is crocodilians. And while generally people think crocodiles and they think Steve Irwin and Nile crocodiles and saltwater crocodiles are 20 feet long, there are a bunch of other species that don't get nearly as big. And while not everyone may enjoy that type of an animal or have the ability to keep it, a lot of people do. I'm trying to work with the legislation, actually, and see if we can make it so people like myself, actually, that want to have those animals for education, if that ban goes through, even as an educator in a nonprofit, I can't own one to educate people, which is important because people are still going to have these, we need to be able to get out and educate them on how to properly take care of them.
Yeah, do you think this kind of legislation is worthwhile?
If it's done right, yes. If it's based on best management practices and husbandry and making sure that the people that do have them are caring for them properly, then yes. The unfortunate part of it is that takes a lot of extra work, and it's a lot easier to just ban everything. And the problem that ends up causing is you have a ton of animals that as soon as they're no longer able, people are no longer able to keep them, there's nowhere for them to go. And these animals end up being killed just because the people can't have them and there's nowhere for them to go. And it's a really unfortunate thing. And the reality is that the only people it's going to affect are law-abiding citizens that care about what's going on. The people that are not caring for the animals properly or that got them illegally or are not, those people generally aren't going to care if you make a ban.
So are there any herps that people should absolutely not own?
There's nothing I would say that anybody should not own if you have the experience. Animals such as venomous snakes, that's for a very experienced keeper with years of apprenticeship and working with those animals. Not anybody should just go out and catch a rattlesnake and keep it, for obvious reasons that it could kill you. Other things like large crocodilians, again, the same thing. There's definitely a value to having those animals in captivity and working with conservation. There's a lot of crocodilian species from around the world that are going extinct. just due to habitat loss. So to be able to keep them and breed them in captivity is a huge thing for the longevity of that species. And there are a lot of people who have the time and the money and resources to do that in their home or at a small facility that they own that zoos and other organizations just don't have the funding and abilities to spread out to that many animals that need help. So there's definitely a benefit to people having them, but you really have to have experience for some of those larger, more dangerous animals.
And what is the benefit, Ryan, of part of your job is to go around and spread the word, or you go to, I know, various events where you're teaching kids about the amphibians and reptiles. What's the point of that?
Really, I started the Herp Society. Actually, this is our 5-year anniversary, and I started it just because I wanted it to educate people. There's so little good information on how to keep these animals, and with the internet now, it's so spread out. You'll get someone who says you should keep it one way, and then another person says you should keep them a completely different way. And I wanted to get out there and help people understand how to better take care of them, so that they can, so that they have the animals live longer and live healthier in captivity, that the people can enjoy them longer, and just kind of dispel a lot of those fears and myths about how gross and slimy and scaly they are.
All right, so our little tree toad, very pretty tree toad, has turned around and is looking right at me. What's going on here?
she's just exploring. So they're actually, a lot of reptiles are really aware of their surroundings and are really intelligent. This little monitor species, that's one of the most intelligent reptiles on the planet, are the monitors. They can solve problems. They can cognitively count up to like 5 or 6. They can do so many different things. But they're kind of, reptiles are seen as this really prehistoric, basic type animal that but they've done so many studies that show they're actually really intelligent. Tortoises even, which kind of seems like a big slow rock, can learn their name and do tricks.
Really? Well, you know, and now this is a monitor, right?
Yep.
This lizard is he's looked like he was resting, but he's looking at me right now. Is he afraid of me?
I wouldn't say he's afraid. This guy, because he's so little, he's a little jumpy. He's nervous because he doesn't know yet that we're not going to hurt him. And in the wild, anything that's little is food. As they're babies, I mean, imagine running around all day constantly being afraid you're going to get eaten. They're really jumpy. Over time, being handled and being worked with, they'll eventually become a lot more used to us and realize that I'm not a threat and that I'm the guy that brings the big, huge thing of food to them. And generally, then they calm down and you can actually interact with them a lot more.
These baby turtles are pretty cute. They're looking at me, but one is hiding under the, so he's just kind of...
He's just sleeping.
Sleeping.
Yeah, I woke him up this morning, so he's being grumpy and sleeping.
All right, we got many more callers, so let's go to Lee in Madison. Hi, Lee.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about my ornate slider. She's over 19 years old, and her name is Brooke.
Aw.
And my two questions are, how long may she be expected to live? And my second question is, she loves fish and chicken, and she will begrudgingly eat turtle pellets, but she didn't read the book on liking vegetable matter. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions to get her to eat her vegetables and anything else that you can recommend to continue her longevity.
I
also just want to mention that she does seem to recognize my face and my voice. And she interacts with us more as she's grown older and she lost her companion several years ago.
Aww.
Yeah, so I think we have 45, with the new little babies that have come in recently, we probably have 60 turtles at our house. And when we walk into the room, all of them jump off their basking platforms and come swimming right to the front watching us because they know we're about to come in with food and they get all excited. But as for the vegetable matter, so generally aquatic turtles are kind of scavengers. So they'll eat fish and they'll find carrion and eat it. Sometimes they'll eat seaweed and other things, but generally it's not a very big part of their diet. So it's not surprising that she's not very interested in much vegetable matter. And I wouldn't be too concerned with that. And then that's where I would probably try and supplement some of like the pellet diets as much as you can, because there'll be a little bit of that nutrition in there. And then as for longevity, the different types of sliders and turtles can live up to 45 years.
Oh, wow. That's delightful.
Yeah, and so Brooke is still a youngster, it sounds like.
Yeah, so and generally in captivity, as long as they're well cared for and supplemented and they have the right types of heat and UVB light, they can live a very long, healthy life in captivity.
Well, good luck, Lee. Thank you very much. So an ornate slider is a type of turtle.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's ornate, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay, Rebecca in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. My grandson has a turtle, and my daughter says it needs to have its nails cut. Is that really necessary? And if so, how would you even do that?
Is it a turtle or a tortoise?
I'm not really sure.
it
doesn't live in the water. It lives, in substrate. I think it's a painted turtle, maybe.
Well, a painted turtle would be an aquatic turtle, so it would live in the water.
Oh, okay.
Does live on, like, a substrate in a dry-type enclosure.
Yeah, it has a water area, a little water bowl or whatever.
Okay.
But then it mostly lives dry.
It's probably either a small tortoise or a box turtle. The best way, really, to trim their nails if they need it is to find a local vet, like a reptile vet, and they can trim the nails really easy. And it's usually not that much to set up an appointment to do that.
Oh, okay, good. So we shouldn't try it ourselves, because she just pulls her legs in and...
Yeah, it's really difficult to do it because they pull their legs in and they're hard to get out. And there is a quick, just like there is on a dog or a cat, and if you cut it, it can be painful for them. So it's best to go in and have like at least the first couple times have a vet do it so that you can learn how to best do it.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca. Would you even have to do it? I suppose if you're handling the turtle, it might scratch you or something.
Well, not even that. It's the same thing with, like, dogs. If you don't trim their nails, they can get really long and curly.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So if they don't have... Another thing you can do is actually putting a piece of, like, slate rock in the enclosure, and as they're walking around on it, they'll scratch their nails and kind of sand them down a little bit.
Just like a scratching post, sort of. Eric on Facebook writes, I saw a little green snake at our property in Juneau County this summer. It was about 12 inches long, very skinny, and bright green. Any idea what this might have been?
That is one of my favorite snakes in Wisconsin, and I spent 6 years trying to find one in the wild. That is a smooth green snake. They're a beautiful, bright green snake, vibrant emerald green, and they actually have a beige phase as well. But yeah, they start out really, really small, about... 3 to 4 inches long when they're babies, when they hatch, and they only get to be about 12 or 14 inches.
Wow, that's really something. So what are you looking forward to seeing or doing this weekend at the Herp Symposium?
I'm really excited just to hear from some of the speakers that we're flying in. Dave Barker from VPI is a breeder, but he's also a big herpetologist, and he has dealt with reptiles from all over the world. He's in captivity. He's bred... all but like 3 or 4 of the species of pythons in the world. So he's kind of, the knowledge he has to be able to sit with him and kind of pick his brain is almost making me shaky. How exciting that is to have somebody with that much knowledge to just sit and chat with. And then just seeing all of these people come together to learn is the coolest thing, to just the atmosphere of everybody just chatting and sharing stories and educating each other on different things that they know. And just this big, it's this really cool environment where everybody is just excited to pass on what they know and to answer your questions and just absorb all of this knowledge from the decades and centuries of knowledge that's in that room.
Sounds great. So very briefly, where can listeners get more information about Herps in Wisconsin?
So Herps in Wisconsin, you can go on our website, the Herps Society website at www.madisonherps.org. Underneath educational articles, we actually have a list of all of the Herps in Wisconsin and some information on all of them.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for coming in, and thanks
yeah,
for bringing
thank
in
you.
Your friends. Ryan McVeigh is president of the Madison Area Herpetological Society. The Midwest Herp Symposium runs today through Sunday at the Monona Terrace in Madison. For registration information, visit madisonherps.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.